Hey, Donna Price here with the Visionary Womenpreneurs podcast. I'm thrilled that you're here with me today. We have an exciting guest in store for you. So, wanted to just remind you about the podcast. We try to interview women that are inspiring and making a difference in the world. And we see visionary womenpreneurs as women that envision with purpose, lead with compassion, strategize to have an impact. They take consistent action to make it happen, and they take on the challenges and learn from them and celebrate their successes. We focus on 7 different areas: womenpreneurship, empowering women and girls, ending poverty, youth education, earth stewardship, health and well-being, and social justice. Today we have an incredible guest, Lisa Wilson, and we're going to be talking about leading with ease. And Lisa is an incredible womanpreneur herself. She comes out of the human resource industry, where she was a leader in large organizations such as Magna International, and she is now bringing the opportunity to small and medium-sized companies. She's the co-author of 2 best-selling books, has now authored her first solo book called Leading with Ease, which we're going to talk about in today's conversation. She holds a bachelor's degree in business, is a certified human resources leader, and holds a certificate in advanced dispute resolution. She has had the opportunity to lead in both the workplace and through her volunteer activities. She supports leaders so they can take their teams to amazing heights. I look forward to you learning incredible things from Lisa during this conversation. Lisa, welcome to Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Awesome. So I know that we've chatted before, and I'm excited to talk with you about your business, your book, and how you work with people. And we have some synergy in how we work because we both focus on vision, mission, values as kind of a jumping off point. But let's start just with telling me like a little bit about like how you started in business and what motivated you to get started in your own business.
Sure. So I was in human resources for about 20 years. And I had some, at the beginning of my career, I worked with some amazing companies, had some really great leaders. And then as the years went on, I was moving up, but changing companies. And I worked for some less than stellar leaders, I'll put it that way. As I was going through, as I got to these sort of more difficult companies, I'll say, I met a coach, and I was having a particularly difficult time at a company, and I met this coach and I took the coaching training, and it was just like, you know, when you're in a really rough space and you see a good thing, it's like a light, right? Like yeah. I was talking to her and it was like, the heavens opened up. So I took the coach training, and I kind of forgot about this until I wrote the book recently. I was giving a speech and I remembered that when I was in my 20s, I wanted to start a business doing training, doing like leadership training. And I'd totally forgotten about it because at the time I went, I'm 20. Nobody wants to learn leadership from a 20-year-old. Right. So I will put it in my back pocket as something I want to do later. And I kind of forgot about it. But then when I went to this coach training, I was like, that's it. I'm starting my own business. I'm going to become a coach. But my last job really, really killed my confidence. I struggled quite a bit there. Initially, I could fight it. I was like, okay, they just don't work the way I do, but I'm here. I'm kind of stuck here for now. I'll just make the best of it. But they'd say things to me like when I was hired, they were like, oh, we need someone with ideas like you. And then as I stayed there longer, they started to say, assimilate, Lisa. I.e. shut up with all your ideas and just do it the way we do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, and after a while, that sounds like you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. And it sunk in, and I just completely lost confidence in everything to do with leadership, human resources. And so I knew when I left there, and thank God I was blessed with a layoff from there. They did a restructuring and I got to leave.
Nice.
And yeah. And who says a blessing with a layoff, right? But thank God, because I made really good money and had a really good pension. So it would have been hard for me to cut ties. But so when I left, I was like, that's it. I'm not touching leadership anymore. I'm going to be a coach. I'm just going to be a coach. And I had no niche and my business didn't go anywhere. And then a little while later, a friend was talking about something going on at her business. And I just went on a rant about it. And she's like, Lisa, you light up when you talk about leadership.
Yeah. So
you need to get back into it. And then I did. And because I have such a passion for it now, business has increased. And, you know, I know you're talking to people, but when you have a niche and you know your passion and you have a vision and mission and values and you're staying in them, it really, now business starts to pick up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So your business is working with leaders, coaching leaders?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
That are working in bigger companies or?
No, I prefer to stick to small to medium sized companies. And okay. I love to work with entrepreneurs who are building their business, because the way I look at it is if you start with a strong culture, if you start strong, then it's easier when you get bigger, because I've worked at the large corporations when they're trying to change their culture. It is awful. It takes forever. It is a slow process, and changing people's minds and hearts takes a lot longer when they're used to behaving and hearing things in one way. They take a long time to believe the new way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Cool. So you wrote a book.
I did.
Which is pretty awesome. And I'm guessing that that's the book that we're seeing in the background.
It there. Sure is. I keep two back here so that I can do this.
Awesome. Leading with ease.
Yeah.
Because yeah. Leadership is so scary for some people also. And I think that fear can be one of the things that gets in the way of good leadership.
It definitely does. So one of the chapters in the books is actually called, Can I Say That? Because half of what I do when I'm coaching, they're like, Lisa, I can't say that. I'm like, well, it's the truth and you can say it. It's not an opinion. You're not calling someone names. It's the facts as you see them. So yes, you can say that out loud. And they're often quite shocked at that, but that I had to name a whole chapter because I say it's people say it so often to me. Am I allowed to say that? Well, yes. Yes, yes you are. With some caveats, obviously, but yes. It is a very scary thing. And what we do with leaders is we take the best mechanic or the best engineer and we go, oh, you're really good at this. We're going to make you the leader. Well, the best mechanic doesn't always make the best leader.
Oh.
They may not have the communication skills. So maybe the not so great mechanic that knows what's going on in the company as a whole, has gotten to know all of his staff, he actually might be the better leader.
Right.
Right. He's not as good at doing the mechanical stuff, but he is really good at communicating, or she.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I think that's what happens. And then they get tossed into these roles and they're like, whoa. And you have one of two things. They either decide, I'm going to be the bossiest boss and I'm going to tell everybody what to do. And that's not what you want. Or they're like, I'm never going to be the bossiest boss because I didn't like that when my boss did it. Well, you have to be a bit of both. Right. There are some people that need more direction and some people that need less. So you have to be able to bend to the needs of your team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the book more.
Sure.
I think there's four parts to the book, right? Or four.
Yeah, there sure is.
All right. So tell us those four things.
I sure will. So the first root, I call it the roots of leadership. So I'll tell you where it came from. It actually came from a course I created. So once I decided to step back into leadership, I created this course and it's called Leading with Ease. And I had gave four lessons. And the way I do it normally is I do it online. We give a lesson 1 week. I ask you to go practice what we learned in the lesson. We come back and coach on that. Second lesson, go practice, come back, and so on. So but sometimes companies call me in and then I'll do it in 2 4-hour sessions because it's really hard to get a team together. But
yeah.
So then I was going to write this book And I decided I'll just put it in the four sections, but I changed the sections to calling them roots because my belief with leadership is that our world changes so quickly now, we have to be able to bend and shift. So I wanted the picture of roots and trees. There's obviously a picture of the tree, a tree on the front of the book and in the book. And so that we're grounded and solid in something, but as the world shifts, we can shift as well. Because as a leader, you have to be able to bend to the needs of your team, to maybe the needs of one member as opposed to another. So you really need that solid foundation. So the four roots are number one, knowing yourself. And when I teach the course, we actually do DISC. In the book, I give a description of what that is. DISC is a personality assessment. And then other things like whether you're an introvert or extrovert and what gives and takes your energy. So you need to understand your own personal energy. The second section is where you and my eye meet. It's called Know Where You're Going. And that's where we talk about mission, vision, and values. And that is the section that totally messed me up in the book because I was writing the book and we created a plan and I was going to write one section, three chapters. Well, I have never taught mission, vision, and values in three separate lessons. So I didn't know how I was going to teach the three of them separately in three separate things because they have to intertwine. They have to speak to each other and they have to come from each other. So we changed the whole outline of the book then, and each section now had an introduction because I needed to teach that these work together and then teach the three concepts. So this was the part of the book that just like took feels like it took forever. I think it took about a month, but I was working with a coach and I got to it. I'm like, I can't do this. I can't write this section. I just can't write this section. So she and I worked through, okay, we're going to put an introduction together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I teach
So,
it in three lessons.
yes. Yes. Yeah.
But you're right, they are so connected to each other.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Because I think, and this is a thing, right? Sometimes we have something in our vision, but then our values don't match that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work out. Right. So it really doesn't work for us because then we're making decisions that are trying to get us somewhere, but our values aren't taking us there. So
Right.
they do need to match.
Yeah, for sure. Wait,
And
what's the third route?
the third is knowing your role. And knowing your role comes from, like I said, when I'm coaching people saying to me, can I say that? Am I allowed to do that? Am I, you know, like that often I'm just giving permission when I'm coaching. So knowing your role and the other place it comes from, so I'm not a big researcher, but Brené Brown is. And Brené Brown in her Dare to Lead book talks about, I listened to it on Audible, so I'm not sure how or where it is in the book, but she talks about when a leader steps into a role, the leadership role, don't know how they provide value to the company anymore. So when we're doing the work, and this works for entrepreneurs too, when we're doing the work, we're used to doing it all, right? And so for an entrepreneur, it would be like doing our website, doing all of our social media, doing the books, doing like we do everything. Once you start to pass that off, now you step into the role of leader and for an entrepreneur, it's great because I just had a quote the other day from someone saying, if you're going to be a thought leader, you have to have time to think.
Oh, I love that.
Right. So we start to pass it off though. And then all of a sudden that busy work that we used to do, we're not doing it anymore. In a company, like a larger company, it's the same thing. We used to, at the end of the day, have a spreadsheet or an email or a series of emails or something that we could hold on to or say, I completed this today. When you step into that leadership role, it's like, oh, I ran all day. I'm busy. I'm exhausted. I was thinking, my brain is tired all of a sudden. I have nothing to hold on to. I didn't complete anything. And often we have a list of three things that we needed to do, and they're not done because we've been putting out fires or running around helping everyone. And so we really talk about, okay, what is your role now? Because it's not to do the spreadsheet, it's to get that spreadsheet done through someone else. Right. And so now we have to, and I often say to people, leaders, they're like, well, I'm doing this much of the work. I'm like, you shouldn't be. You should not be. You should be doing 50% of the work that the rest of your team is doing or less. So I worked like with lawyers, and I had this lawyer who was like running the business. And I'm like, you can't have the same number of clients as your staff does. You have to run the business and do the books and do all of that stuff. You don't have time to take on that with clients. It's, of course you're exhausted, you know, like you can't do both. You have to be the leader.
Right.
So that's the third section. And then the last section is knowing how to discuss the tough stuff. So we do a whole thing on difficult conversations and how to prepare for and have those difficult conversations. Because that is another one where, again, like I said, in the previous section, I'm often saying to people, yes, you can say that. Or did you talk to them? Did you ask them? Did you, you know, like I'm constantly saying, did you go have that conversation? Did you ask them why they chose to do that? Did you, you know, like people are more reasonable than we think, but we sit back and we don't ask the questions and we don't talk and we just, and then stuff, and then we start to make assumptions, which is the other reason, that's the other thing I do is mediate, because a lot of times these things build and build and build because we didn't have the conversation at the beginning when we should have.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I find that with those conversations, they're scary for leaders often.
Yeah.
So you procrastinate that because it's uncomfortable kind of conversation to have. But if you're having regular conversations with people and meeting more often, it becomes easier because you know what's going on. And so often when I would talk with leaders, they're like, they do their performance, their annual performance review. And that's the first time they've talked to the person about how they're performing. And it's like, no, you've got to do more than that.
And so when I teach that, I teach that there are zero surprises in a performance review.
Exactly.
A performance review is a review. If you haven't talked about it prior to the performance review, it doesn't belong in the performance review. There should be no surprises.
Exactly.
And that comes from my own experience. One of my first jobs. So when I was in university, I used to work at a plywood plant. So I made really good money. I was able to pay my way through. But I realized at the end that I was like, oh, I'm going to be applying for jobs with zero experience. So my last summer of university, I applied for jobs in HR to try and get some form of experience. I worked for this woman for 4 months, and where they lived, there was no bus to get there. There was no way to get there. So I brought my bike out. My parents brought my bike, and I used to bike to work, but I was working in an office setting. So I would bike out to work and I would get there early. I would sit in my office to cool off. It was summer. It was hot.
Yeah.
So I would sit in my office to cool off. There was no shower. So I would then go to the bathroom, wash my face and, you know, do the clean up the stinky bits, put some deodorant on and get dressed in my day's attire. But she didn't come in till 8:30. So what happened is I would sit at my desk until, I don't know, 20 after, 25 after. And then I would go, I'd already set up my day. I would go to the bathroom. I'd clean up and I might come back at 25 too. And so she said to me, well, you're frequently late, but she waited until my last month when we were doing the performance review. And she said, you're frequently late. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm here 20 minutes early every morning. She goes, well, no, I see you coming back from the bathroom. I said, but I've been in my office since 10 after. My day is already set up so I can cool down. And she goes, well, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, I didn't know you thought it was a concern. Like, I've been here 4 months. You've been for 4 months thinking I'm late every day and you never said anything.
Crazy.
I was like, unbelievable. And yeah, so that's like a big thing I say to people. If it wasn't said before, never say it in the performance.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I feel like the performance review is your opportunity to set up the year with that staff person. And then you're talking about it at least monthly.
If not more. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to vision, values, mission,
and
dig in there a little bit more.
Yeah.
And like why they're so important. So that, I know that we agree on they're so important, but let's talk about why they're so important.
So for me, again, the book is about having roots, right? And really, when I think about a vision, mission, and values, I always give this picture, is that the vision is the scene at the end of a long road. It's somewhere we're trying to get to. Someone's given me a new thought on this, but I'll go with my way first and then I'll tell it after. So the vision is that at the end of the long road, it's that beautiful picture that we might never get to, but we're going to just keep striving. It's something that gives us motivation to make a better world. The mission is how we're getting there. And it's basically the road we're on and how we're choosing to travel it right now. And then the values are our guideposts, and we're on Zoom, so I can only give you this way, but I usually put my arms way out wide and say the guideposts out here.
Yeah.
And those are to keep us all moving in the same direction and with the same set of rules. So we are going to move towards that vision. We're going to do it in this way. And the values are, here's how we're all going to behave while doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's dig in a little bit deeper with mission.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about it's how you get there. So tell me a little bit more about how you help people define that mission.
Sure. The way I look at the mission is I think about a military mission. So military is fairly easy. Most militaries have some form of protecting and serving, right? Where the military is there to protect and or serve. But then within that vision, I'm sure there's a vision of having a safer place or protecting our country or something to that effect.
One would hope, yes.
Yeah, something, yeah. So then within that, there are missions that people go on. So you might a small group of people working together to do the same thing. So they're all, this is how we're doing that. So sometimes, and I've had debates about this with people, is sometimes there's a mission for the company as a whole. So maybe you make a product and this is how we're going to make that product. But then you have some support groups that might need their own missions, right? They might need a statement that brings that in. So the larger the company, the more likely you need something like that. We had, but this is a, like I said, an argument that I've had with different people, but I'm like, well, but if I'm working in HR, I never touch a part, right?
Right.
I never touch a part. So what do I do in that mission?
Right.
But you need to be really clear. I describe a company that I worked for in the book called Magna International. And they do have a mission and vision. I had to go look it up. And I don't remember what it is right now, but they do have a mission and a vision. But that's not what I remember. They also have something called the Magna Carta. Or sorry, the Magna Charter. It's based on the Magna Carta.
Okay.
And in there, they give their specific things that everyone needs to be aware of. Like, if you work here, these are the things that you can expect. The number one heading is job security. And underneath job security, it says, no one can guarantee job security, which is a reality. No one can guarantee job security. We work to create job security by making a better product at a better price.
Oh.
So again, I was in HR, but I knew my role in helping us make a better product at a better price. I knew I was there to support the employees who were making the product. I knew I was there to make sure that they had everything they needed so that they could do the best job possible. And that was my role. And I knew that. And it wasn't, when I say that to people, sometimes they're like, well, does that mean you were treated as like second class? No, I was not. I was still an employee working there. I was still treated as well as they were, but I understood my role. Employees should never have had to leave the floor to come to me. I needed to go to the floor to meet them because they needed to stay at their job and get the product made. That's yeah. What we were doing, right? That was our goal. And so that was my role.
Okay.
Yeah. So being really, really clear on that was really helpful. And that's where this comes from for me. When I knew my role, it was really easy to do my job.
Yeah.
I knew what my role was in that vision and in the mission really as well. Like I said, the way it was written isn't exactly like a vision or a mission, but when it's really clear like that, everybody knows their role in that. At other companies, I, as HR, took my team aside and said, okay, this is our vision. This is our mission. We don't touch the part. We're not dealing with the clients. We're not. So what's our role in that? So what do we think our mission is? And that way it helped my team to get clear on what they were to do to support.
Yeah. It's a bigger mission.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about vision a little bit and why that's important to an organization, company, entrepreneur.
I think this has gotten even bigger now than we used to. So this is where someone I was speaking to worked with recently. She talked about vision, mission, and values being a triangle, but at the top of the triangle was your purpose. and your purpose never changes. So we might now have, and I think this is a bit of a new generation thing, where maybe I make shoes, but my purpose is to give money to or bring shoes into third world countries. So I'm going to make shoes. I think this is some a company now, but I'm going to make shoes. I'm going to sell the shoes, and then I'm going to take so many shoes and I'm going to bring them to the third world, right? Like into a third world country. So their purpose has nothing to do with shoes. Their purpose is to put shoes on, you know, to give the shoes basically.
Yeah.
So she added that piece in it for me. But prior to that, for me, and the way I've written the book is that your vision is that statement that's far away. So better product at a better price is kind of a vision, right? We're always striving to make that. I used a couple other ones. There was, I need to open the book for these, but Magna does have a vision, and theirs now is improving mobility. They've changed their language to improving mobility. So theirs isn't just about making car parts anymore. They want to make it easier for people to move around the world. So it's something that will like that we're constantly chasing. So we want to make the world of mobility better. Tomorrow we get something new that comes in technology wise or whatever. Well, now the way we do that has to change. And so it's going to, now we have to work harder to improve that, right?
Yeah.
Or to get there.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I would see that possibly as purpose.
Yes. Yeah.
Or mission. So I look at purpose. I talk about core purpose, which is closely aligned with mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then with vision, kind of creating that picture of like what you're building, what you're creating. Yes. And I see in the coaching world a lot of, and I even have a course on vision boards, and vision boards are fun and everything, but for business, I think that the vision has to be about what you're building for your business, mm-hmm. not how you're going to feel driving the new car. I just keep hearing coaches talking about, you know, like, well, imagine, you know, like go out and drive that new car. And I talk about impact. Impact of like, how are we going to impact the world? Like, how do we, our businesses impact the world? And kind of that ripple out effect of successful business means successful family. We can, and then some businesses like the shoe company is donating a pair of shoes for every pair of shoes purchased, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can choose different types of impact from our success.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different ways to do that. But then personal impact can be having a new car.
Yeah.
But it's not part of the vision.
No. God. No.
And like I have gotten kind of pulled into that whole vision board. And I mean, in my train, I did a vision board thing years ago. And a woman called me a couple months after the training and said, you know, like I did the workshop with you and nothing's happened. And I said, well, what have you been doing? And she said, I've been looking at the vision board. And I said, okay, that's great. You know, cause that can be inspiring, but what have you been doing? And she hadn't been doing anything. And I think, you know, from the movie, what was that movie called? The Secret.
Yes.
You know, everybody thinks, you know, you create this vision board and then magically things just manifest and, you know, like you just look at it and they just appear in your life. And it's like, well, no, you've got to take action.
You've
got to go from like, what am I building? So I've shifted myself, like how I'm looking at it and how I'm teaching it of more like the corporation where you walk into the lobby and they've got the picture of the vision.
Yes.
Like we're building this new building. Like that's part of our vision. You know, so it's like, look at your business. Like what's the destination for your business? Your personal impact, the car, the house by the lake, are all great impacts, but they're not the vision.
And I started to realize, so I created my website based on a lot of other coaches. And then I went, wait a minute, I've just sat back now and I'm getting my website changed as we speak. I have actually a page right here of here's all the changes I want. And one of the things is in the about section, it just talks about me, but I don't have a mission, vision, and values. And I'm like, but that's not like, that's what I tell people they should have. And I have it, it's in my head. It's part of my soul. It's part of, but I haven't written it out for others to see. And I'm like, that whole about needs to be about where I'm going and what I, how I want to do that. Right. Like if I teach that, why isn't it there? Right. Yeah. So, and I think that's important. And I think I don't like to get hung up on the, well, the purpose is this and the vision is this and the whatever. I think it's important to know where you're headed, however you want to state that. So when I spoke to this woman recently who was like, well, no, that's your purpose because the purpose is never changing. And I was like, okay, that makes sense to me. So my purpose is to create better leaders.
Yeah.
That like is a very simple statement. My purpose is to create better leaders. What's my vision? Well, I haven't gotten all that out there because for me, it was going to be my vision statement. My vision is creating better leaders.
Right.
You know, and I'll probably add some wording to that because again, with what I teach, but I use two examples in the book. And so I open them up for you. So Magna's, theirs is to create a better world of mobility responsibly. They put in another word in there.
Yeah.
And then this other company I used was called Cementation. Cementation is, I actually happen to be in a Toastmasters group with the founding president. So I talked to him because my boyfriend actually used to work for his company. So I trusted that what he was saying to me was felt, what we call, he calls it at the face. I used to say it was felt on the floor, right? So the people, whatever the vision we're putting up there is that the people who are doing the frontline work actually feel that.
Yeah.
So if, you know, for the small businesses, if you hire a, if you hire a VA or you hire a bookkeeper, you hire, they feel your vision, mission, and values are when they're working for you. So it's not just something that you're putting out to clients. It's something that's felt within the company.
Yeah.
So I trusted that, you know, I could use them as an example. I know most people will take like large corp, you know, like, well, at wherever, well, I've never worked at those companies. Like I've never worked for Apple. I've never worked for, you know,
me
Google.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to use those. So there, I'm going to have to preface this because there is a new president and they've changed the vision, but their vision, their founding vision was to fundamentally change the way mine contracting is carried out within our industry for the benefit of all stakeholders. So he saw a way that mine contractors were just there to make a lot of money and they weren't there to create relationships. And so that's what he wanted. And that's what he created. And then he, and like Magna added responsibly, meaning they want to be, and there's more wording later in their mission.
Yeah.
That clarifies what that means. Right. And so the same for Cementation. So Magna's vision or Magna's mission is we see a future where everyone can live and move without limitations. That's why we're developing technology, systems, and concepts that make that make vehicles safer and cleaner while serving our communities, the planet, and above all, people, forward for all. So that's their mission statement. They don't call it a mission statement, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Cementations, again, it builds on what that mission was or that vision was, and it's to earn the distinction of being the mining contractor of choice of both clients and employees through excellence in safety, performance beyond all expectations, and building of long-term relationships based on a best for project philosophy. So he wanted to be clear to his staff that he was not there to make the most money. He was there to do the projects in the best way possible. If it made him less money, that's okay.
Yeah.
They still needed to make money, but that's okay.
Right.
And then each had their own set of values. So I said, like I said, Magna had the employee's charter that included things like safety and stuff like that. And then in the book, I talk about, okay, if I'm an employee there and I need to get rid of waste, just for an example, I need to get rid of waste. Do I have to go and ask my manager or can I look at my mission and vision and be clear with what I'm supposed to do?
Yeah.
And both have statements that best for project stakeholders responsibly, you know, they all have language in there that The way I put it in there is that you have three options. The number one way to safely dispose of the waste, the sort of okay way, but not the best way. And then the way that we all know is wrong, right? Like there's three ways to do it. Well, as an employee there, just from the mission and vision, I know that I'm supposed to do number one at both of those companies. I am supposed to do the best way that we could possibly do it, the cleanest way to take care of everyone that's a stakeholder. So it's very clear now. Do I have to go ask my boss which choice to make? No, do the best one.
Right.
And then next year, because both talk about innovation as well, and Best for Project or Magna talks about innovation, both next year, when we find a better way to do it, I expect that you do that way. Right. Like always better, always moving forward, always doing better. And I think it's really clear. Like I said, then as an employee, it's really clear. I don't have to go ask my boss. There's one, two, and three. Do I do one, which is the best way, or do number two, which is, you know, and there may be times where maybe I don't want to say under the waist thing, but there may be decisions where you're like, okay, what's the impact of one and two? And they're close, but two is way cheaper. At this point, maybe we're doing number two because one of our stakeholders is our shareholders. And we need to make sure that we're doing things as economically as we can as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's important for organizations to like walk their talk.
Yes.
And vision, values, purpose, mission, to me, is all about like living that and like being in alignment. If you're saying that these are our values, then you've got to live those values. And if you're not living them, then you have to be working towards them, at least. Because values sometimes are like high ideals that, you know, we're all striving for, but we're not perfect all the time.
No.
But if you're consistently like violating your own values, like then it impacts your staff morale.
Yes. Like,
it has all sorts of negative impacts. And I think when staff can see at least that, like we're on the road to best practice, even though maybe we're not totally there yet, that can be helpful. But being out of alignment is detrimental, so I think, to the organization.
Totally. And I've been saying this too, and that's kind of the purpose of what I do, is saying that, look, the idea of being the leader is that you are responsible for your culture. Your mission, vision, and values are what are going to create your internal culture, right? That's the culture you're wanting to create. But say you have a value for respect, and you have an employee who is completely disrespectful to all of his teammates, but he's one of your best, I don't know, we'll say salespeople, or he brings in the most money or whatever. Yeah. I often see people let them get away with stuff. Well, here's the thing. He might be your best salesperson. He might have the most. But if he's making life miserable for the other five salespeople, I assure you, you will do better when he's gone.
Right.
Because now you've said, we have this value for respect, but if you're really good, you can just be a jerk.
Right.
So, and that's what I often see. So one of the things under the role is you are the keeper of the culture. It is your responsibility to deal with it when someone is outside, is acting or behaving outside of the culture you want to create. That is your role. And if you're not dealing with it, then I give away free eBooks on my website, and I wrote an eBook called You're the Leader. So yes, it's your fault. Because the reality is that's your job. Your job is to keep the culture. Right. And if you're not dealing with it, and oftentimes that's what I'm working with. And I had clients, and it's very funny because they've recently merged with someone else. So, but I was like, and so in the merger, you know, as you merge with something, things get uncomfortable for a while everybody learns things. Right. So I was back and talking to one of the people, and I said, you know, here's the thing, you've already done this. And he said, and I said, well, you are my example of a really well done change. And he was like, oh. And I said, well, I went in and I worked with them. I coached all of the leaders there took the leading with ease. And we also worked with the team itself and created some rules to work by. So I went in, I said, what's everyone dealing with? What do we want? And then we created, okay, here's what we're going to live by. And they said, okay, great. And they agreed to that. They started working in that way. They had an employee who was a bit toxic at the time. So even during those meetings, it was hard to get them through because she was trying to sort of stir the pot throughout.
Yeah.
She left very shortly after because this was going to be the new way. And she now saw she wasn't going to get her way.
Yeah.
Then they later had someone else who also was starting to stir the pot and cause problems and stuff. But because they had now ingrained this culture, the rest of the team wasn't listening to her.
Right.
So there were some rules around. One of the rules was if you have a problem with a person on the team, you must discuss it within 24 hours or let it go. It has to be discussed within 24 hours or let it go. And I mean, within reason, if something happened on Friday and you talk to them on Monday, like we said within reason kind of thing, or someone takes vacation, talk to them when they get back. But so we said, you must. So, and you must speak to the person with whom you have the offense or the rub or whatever. So that was one of the rules. Well, this person was going around trying to stir the pot about other people and no one would listen to her. And not only would they not listen to her, but they went then said, she just keeps trying. And they went to the boss and said, you need to deal with it. And so he did. Yeah. And I was like, see, this is what happens when you ingrain the culture, it will keep itself.
Right.
But when these kind of things happen, so he did, he tried to deal with her several times. He brought her in, had the discussions, and she couldn't see. She couldn't see it. And she also eventually left by her own choice. So the culture was so strong that she wasn't going to get her way. She wasn't going to be able to stir the pot. She wasn't going to be able to do the things she wanted to do. So she left.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when we ingrain that culture, when we're solid in it and we're strong in it, then, and it'll happen with clients too. Clients will, they'll self, I don't know what the right word is for clients, but they'll self fire. Like they won't come to you, right? Like you won't have to deal with those difficult clients anymore because they won't want to work with you.
Right.
Because you're working in a way that doesn't match with whatever it is that they want. And that's okay too.
Definitely. So I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about like your business and how it's been being a womanpreneur and working with companies, small, medium-sized companies. How has that affected your business?
So I think for me, like I said, initially I my focus was just coaching. And then I said coaching transitions, which again was still pretty broad and whatever. But the moment I got back into doing the leadership, it really helped. COVID actually increased my business quite a bit because through COVID, I did a lot of mediations. I did more mediations in the first 6 months of COVID than I'd done in 7 years of business.
Wow. Yeah.
And while I say I'm a mediator, it's not like a thing that I advertise all the time. So you sort of have to know that I do it, you know, like people that have heard a podcast or something like that, but it's not like a main piece on my website. Hey, you're having problems, you know? So it was, yeah, it was interesting that many came up. And I find for me, I don't have any issues with that. I know that there have been times in workplaces where I struggled because I'm female. You know, just little comments and stuff that are made that people don't realize are really putting women down. But I haven't seen that in business. I haven't seen or felt that in the business that I'm doing. And I coach both men and women.
Awesome.
I get that question quite a lot. The moment I went out, they were like, so you only coach women? I was like, why would you even think that? Of course not.
Yeah.
I said, why? I said, because men struggle as much as we do. They just, it's just different.
Right.
Our society hasn't been kind to men or women, just in different ways.
Totally, totally true. So if you had to do this again, go into business, would you do it again?
Yes.
Would you do it sooner or?
No, I don't think so. I think that So hindsight is 2020. While I was working at that company and dealing with the rebuilding of my confidence after leaving there, I would have said, good Lord, no, I should have left sooner. But I think that it's made me better at my business because I've seen what happens in those toxic environments. If I had tried to become a coach after those, you know, my first three companies, which were pretty awesome, you know, the first few jobs I had were pretty awesome. If I'd tried to start my business then, I don't think I'd be as effective because I'd have been walking into places and going, how does that even, like, I don't believe that that could even happen. Like, that doesn't make sense. Whereas now I'd worked for those more, I'll say more toxic environments. Some were better than others. But like I said, the last one for me was the worst. But because I've been there, now I get it. And I get what it feels like. And I get how awful you feel. And at that last company, I was on both sides of complaints. So someone made a complaint about me. And then I had to make a complaint about someone else.
Mm.
And I understand, and again, hindsight is 2020. And I look back and went, wow, that environment was so toxic that an HR manager felt she had to put in a full out complaint to get anybody to do anything.
Yeah.
That's pretty sad, right? Yeah. Like, that's not behavior I would have ever had anywhere else. I would have gone and dealt with the person head on.
Yeah.
But I was like, can't do that here. Got to make a full complaint.
Yeah.
And so I get that culture now and I get what happens and I know I have a, well, I'll say I know from my experience how people feel, but I know that everyone has their own feelings around things. And even in the exact same situation, people would have felt differently than I did. But, and I, it's always so hard because I worked with some wonderful people there and some are still friends and stuff. You know, I really think highly of the people I worked with, but the culture was just, not good.
Yeah.
But I think it really served me. So I think if I tried to go out any sooner, I think I would have been blindsided. Because I only ever worked for a great company.
Yeah. Yeah, I sort of agree. Like, hindsight, of course, is 2020. But it's part of the journey of getting ready or getting the skills to do what you're doing. I like being on the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. Yes. Now, you know what? I think I was always meant to be. So I switched jobs every 3 years or so.
Mm.
I often change jobs after 3 years. And someone said, you know, someone who was working for me said, oh, but I'm changing jobs too quickly. And I said, I change jobs every 3 years. I still continue to get jobs.
Yeah.
And she said, really? And I said, yeah, I said, because I need new. It's just part of who I am. I need that. I like the new. I like something new and interesting in a new project and a new, you know, like, so I think I'm a person who was meant for consulting.
Yeah.
To go make the changes and come out. You know, that's kind of what I was there for. And I have no interest in leading the teams. And I was talking to someone, we do similar work. And she was like, yeah, I go in for 3 months and I do this and that and the other. And she said, she was talking to someone there and she's like, it's okay, I'm here. I'm like, but you're not, you're only there for 3 months. You need to support the leaders in getting to where they need to be. So you're not, like, so I was like, woo, that's not like, that's not kosher for me. And I'm very clear about that right from the beginning. I'm not here to lead for you. I'm here to get you to lead in a way that you want. That's going to, you know, fulfill your vision and it's following your values, not mine. Awesome. Although, like, I will say if your values are way off mine, then probably we shouldn't work together, but if you're wanting to be the person that berates their employees, that I'm not for you.
It's not gonna work.
I'm not for you.
No. So one of my early jobs, I think out of high school, I worked at a state institution. I was working with people with disabilities, and one of the staff said, you know, if you're here for 3 years, you're here for life. And I was like, oh no.
No. Yeah.
And you say you switch every 3 years reminded me of, like, time to go.
That's awesome.
But so one of the things that, like, we talk about on Visionary Womenpreneurs is just the impact we're having, and, like, your impact is on the different companies that you're having and creating better workplaces for people, which is huge.
Yeah.
So that they're not in toxic workplaces and their companies can be more effective.
Yes.
as a result of it not being toxic, which is just so important.
Yeah, I got a stat the other day, and I'm going to have to go back and look for it, but that something, I think it's like 117%. You get 100, I can't remember what the percentage is, but when you have a good workplace culture, it's some ridiculous number of better productivity, like 117% better productivity. So I'm just trying to look and see if I can find it. I went through I did a web search, and anyway, it was a crazy, crazy high amount, right? Yeah. Like we were like, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when people feel good about their jobs and where they're working, they're going to perform better.
140. Okay. So a stat, I had to ask where it was from. I did this through ChatGPT, but I said, there's a stat from a Gallup poll that it says, companies with highly engaged employees outperform their competitors by 147% earnings per share.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I got something later, and I, again, really high numbers. You just think, wow, 140% of earnings. And another one was, research shows that companies with happy, engaged employees have 20% higher productivity rate and 25% higher profitability rate compared to companies with disengaged employees.
Says something for having good workplace culture, good leadership.
Yes. And I think we don't put enough emphasis on it. And it's probably because, and I come from more the like feelings and, hey, so I went and found these stats for that reason, is because I know that there's some people that are like, yeah, Lisa, blah, blah, blah. Well, but if I can say to you 147% higher earnings per share, 20% more productivity and 25% higher earnings, like that's huge.
Yeah.
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 And just by being kind, really.
Right.
Just by being who you say you're going to be.
For a lot of people, if it is a toxic work environment, they're looking for another job.
Yes.
And so you have the impact of that constant turnover, retraining, mm-hmm. and the cost of that is huge to replace an employee.
Yeah. It costs 3 times the employee's salary to replace them.
Yeah. I was going to say 2.5, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So huge impact.
Yes.
Not keeping people happy and not being a good place to work.
Yeah.
Where can people find your book or find one of your free eBooks?
Nice. So on my main website is lmwcoaching.ca. That's the main website, but you can purchase the book through leadingwithease.ca. And there's also courses there and stuff that you can, if you want to take the full course, the information's all there for you as well.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's been great to interview you, and such important work that you're doing.
Thank you.
I encourage people to go to Lisa's website to get her book, Leading with Ease, and to learn more about her coaching at lmwcoaching.ca. And the links will be in the show notes. And thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for being here today, listening to the Visionary Womenpreneurs podcast, or watching us either here on Spotify or on YouTube. Really appreciate you. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform, and subscribe, please leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. We talked about the field guide during, you can pick up the Visionary Womenpreneurs field guide at compassroseconsulting.com/field guide. Be sure to grab your copy. My other books are there as well. So thanks once again for being a listener to the Visionary Womenpreneurs podcast. I look forward to talking with you next time. In the meantime, take action, make it happen, live your vision, and have some fun.